Hey guys, Sick Editor Sneethi here, back again with another old episode that is pre-hiatus. It is the last one, so last time you're gonna hear shit quality and us being at each other's throats, at least in this manner, we'll be at each other's throats again. Anyways, I digress. We hope you enjoy, and as always, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, her soprano is coming out.
Ha! I can't. I don't know what I'm doing.
It's like Snow White talking to birds.
Yes.
La 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 la.
That's exactly. Uh huh. Yep.
La 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 la.
Yeah.
Higher. Go higher.
The highest that I could go is like this without hurting my throat.
She sounds like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Oh, your kids.
Yes.
That's so accurate. I love it.
Welcome to Mickey Mouse. Says Clubhouse. No, my voice cracked.
Oh, yeah. Mickey.
Yeah, you need to Yikes. Start singing like the Clubhouse. Yikes. The Mickey Mouse Clubhouse theme song.
Hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog.
Yeah, diggity
dog. That, it's a brand new day. What you waiting for? I don't know the lyrics.
Come on. No, that's the end. That's the end. It's.
I know the Hindi one. I know the. No.
Was me. I know. I remember Miska Muska. Okay, it's M-I-C. Oh, wait. I know.
Oh, dude.
M-O-U-S-E.
M-O-U-S-E. Dun, dun, dun. M-I-C-K-E-Y.
M-O-U-S-E.
It's the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
Yeah. Donald, and then there's the roll call.
Time, it's fun inside.
Yeah,
dun,
Mickey.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. No, Donald. Dun, 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 Daisy.
Roll call. It's Mickey. Yeah. It's Mickey, Minnie, Donald.
No, not Mickey. Not Mickey. It's no. It's Donald, Daisy, Goofy, Pluto.
Oh, Minnie. Oh my God! Yeah, and Mickey. Yeah, sorry, my bad.
Oh yeah.
Crazy.
Wow.
Donald,
crazy.
Present. Crazy Daisy. Here. Goofy.
Oh, yeah.
Pluto,
rats
make me crazy. Crazy?
I was crazy once.
Can you find like an EDM version of this? Yeah, like EDM Mickey Mouse. Let me see if that exists. One sec. Oh no. EDM Mickey Mouse. Oh yeah, there is something. Hot Dog Dance Remix. It's by DJ Melodies.
Oh no. Okay. Let's go.
I don't think you'll be able to hear it. I'm wearing earphones.
You're so useless. Play it.
I'll send it to you.
I'm singing here.
Oh my God, my head hurts. Now I'm getting an ad that lasts 15 seconds.
And this, kids, is why you get an ad blocker.
Yeah, I don't know why I haven't got one yet. I think I was going to get one, then Sunidhi and Yoshita went like, you don't have an ad blocker, and then I just never got it.
I'll send you the link to the one I use because you're fucking lazy unless I send you something
yeah,
myself.
Yeah, like, dude, you don't actually have to... Like, just look up Chrome ad blocker extension and you're good.
Yeah, literally.
That's all you need to do, yeah.
No, I think her point is that we said it so many times that she's just like,
I know,
fuck
no,
you.
I know that, but it's stupid. That's a stupid reason not to do something.
Hey, this is kind of boppy.
You know, Tanvi, let's just continue. I'm not, even though she's leading the episode, let's just continue because she's so annoying
without
right now.
Her?
She's like,
yeah,
let me listen to this bop and not listen.
Without her, even though she's
just leave us.
That makes sense.
This is really good, dude. This is really
good.
I'm one second, I'm sending you the link.
Her. Can you kick her out of the thing?
Shut up.
You shut up.
God. What has gotten into both of you?
Guys,
I'm angry.
To Sunidhi, and if she doesn't include this as the intro, then it's one whole.
I don't think we're allowed to. Let me see.
This is a remix, and I don't know who it's by. It's by someone called Attic Stein, and I have not heard of them before.
Just because you haven't I mean, Tanvi hasn't heard of Addison Rae.
Oh my god, yeah. No, today, like, it's very matter-of-fact-ish. Like, so if you want to come in with anything that you'd like to contribute, feel free to. Yeah. Like, it's not a scary story.
You're telling us. Okay. Yeah.
I thought you were telling us. It's not a scary story. Yeah. It's just, like, flow of events, kind of.
Because Anika can't handle scary stories.
Anika can't handle scary stories. They're real people who actually died because of this shit, bro. I can't really make them a horror story.
Stanley, we're having a little
leave me alone,
we're
damn
having
it.
A brainstorm session.
Did I stutter?
Good. This is good. I'm going to grab a glass of water.
Okay. This is in the morning. Welcome back, everybody, to the podcast. I am Sunidhi.
I guess I am technically Tanvi. Yeah.
I might be Anika. Not too sure yet, but maybe.
I'm glad one of us is certain on our
again
on our existences.
These are all things we admit to you pretty begrudgingly. Like, none of us are happy about having to do this intro.
If I must, for
a myriad of reasons.
If I must be someone, fine, I must be myself.
If I have to be referred to as a person, I guess.
Yeah. That seems to be the case.
Just very disappointed that I'm not a jellyfish. That's about it.
All I wanted to do was a frog. That's all I want.
Oh my god, we'd be such, you know, like, unlikely friends, like the jellyfish and the frog.
Oh my god.
I like that. I'd read that.
I just wish to not exist.
Oh yeah, like, I just pictured, like, a really cute children's animated book that's, like, watercolor. You know the illustrations are clearly watercolor. Yeah, that's so cute.
We'll have like a modern day Romeo and Juliet situation where our jellyfish and frog parents are like, no, you can't be friends with them. And then we still...
How would a jellyfish and a frog
like
meet?
Romeo and Juliet, but
frogs can swim.
And then there are like...
the water matters.
Little like cheeks that are made of pink watercolor, like soft pink watercolor, and both of them have like cute little cheeks. Oh, that's gonna be
that's
so
adorable. Can someone illustrate this for us?
And the ending scene is the frog's about to be like it seems like the frog's gonna be like, oh, I love you, whatever, but it's actually just the frog goes, dude, it's water wet. While they're both in swimming water.
I just got a headache. No, genuinely, this stupid podcast name is such a problem for me. It is such a problem because anytime someone says, I have a question, or if I go like, may I ask a question, the first thing in my head is like, dude, is water.
Yes,
like,
100%.
Oh god, like, I'm sitting in class, man, and the teacher's like, okay, I'm gonna ask you guys a question. I'm like, dude, is water wet?
I'm ready to just mumble like some bullshit about what I've just heard. Like, oh, photons? Mm-hmm. Well, according to a photo, this is just bullshit, honestly. The podcast has ruined my brain.
I think it was ruined before that, but sure, you can assign blame.
On the podcast.
Yeah, sure, you can assign blame.
I think there were issues, like, I've known, there are issues you've had that predate.
Like, diagnosable issues.
Like, serious, you should have been in therapy since the age of 5, kind of issue.
Anyways, speaking of jellyfish, today's episode is about demonic possession.
Lovely.
I think this will be added to our Spooktober series.
Yeah. It's just the two episodes in the month. That's the site.
Yeah, that's we post once in 2 weeks. I'm sorry, we have very hectic uni schedules.
Yeah, and by that basically we don't have any decent areas where we actually can organize stuff. You know.
Yeah, we have like one hour.
Like, one person's free on Wednesday, one's free on Thursday, the other's free on Friday, and every other day is just like so difficult to find any time. And then they make me wake up in the morning.
That's why we're recording at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Talking about demonic possession.
We can sort this out at some point. If not, we'll just drop out of college. It's okay.
Please help us drop out of college. This is community service. You can help us. How you can help us? We don't know. Come for the way. We come on for the way.
Send me money. That's
no, burn her ramen. She made me wake up in the morning.
Can you shut up?
No, I will not. You're gonna make me wake up this morning and Saturday morning.
Handa's like, you fucker.
I'll burn your ramen.
Come to my house first. Show up here, pussy.
I can feel the sexual tension. Can you guys feel the sexual tension?
Pull up.
Honestly, yeah.
Pull up. I know you won't. And then they make out. Yeah.
Just telepathically.
Yeah. With like a safe distance in between because COVID.
Social distance even in your dreams.
Okay. So today, when I thought of this episode, I thought I'll make it nice and spooky and about like, ooh, demonic possessions. But then the more I read into it, the more I got to know it's like this actually happened to real people and not that long ago, honestly. And it's very disturbing to hear a lot of this stuff.
It's very sad.
And the rest of the opinions will come after I've read the cases out to you. But yeah, know that this isn't a scary story. These were real people who had real messed up shit happen to them. So yeah.
It's less about being scared of like, oh, what if a demon possesses me? And more about like, how is all of this going to be like taken by society? You know, like how are like doctors going to help you? How are like other people going to help you?
Yeah. If you have the first question, what if a demon possesses me? Honestly, just talk to Tanvi about it.
No, talk to Shane Madej. Talk to Shane Madej. Man's been through it.
No, I am a demon.
No, Tanvi so is a demon. So you have to like, trade, yeah, you have to talk to her.
Yeah, I'll tell you the exact step-by-step procedure. I'll make like an entire plan out for you. I'll be like, what works for you? Because if you have important exams, we don't want to be fucking with you then. Nah. I don't want to be writing a test on nuclear, like on thermodynamics for somebody else. If I'm not even the one getting credit.
Literally, imagine.
We'll figure it out.
Just Satan's right-hand woman.
Anyways. So, the first case that I have for you today is Annelise Michel. I don't know if you would have heard of this, but this was actually the first spooky horror kind of case I ever heard.
Did they do an episode? Is that a BuzzFeed unsolved episode by any chance? The German Girl?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh, okay.
She's also the inspiration for the movie.
I could have used that for studying.
She's the exorcism of Emily Rose.
Emily Rose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I think I haven't seen the movie, but wasn't it more circled around the dial?
I've literally no idea. I haven't watched it either.
I haven't seen it, yeah. Honestly, this case is really terrifying, so I don't think I'm going to watch The Exorcism of Emily Rose either.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, Handa and I are not huge horror fans. That's more Sunidhi's domain.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it. I genuinely love it. But the issue is trying to sleep at night.
Hence why we're doing this 10 in the morning. Actually, no, that's more of our schedule. But even then.
Yeah. Anyways, so getting into the story of Annelise Michel. She was born into an extremely devout Catholic family. As Michelle's mother told The Telegraph in 2005, she had a child out of wedlock in 1948, bringing such shame on her family that she was made to wear black on her wedding day. Very hard to atone for her sins and went to great extremes with prayer and other stuff by the time Annelise was born. Additionally, her father had considered becoming a priest and the three of her aunts were nuns. As a result, Annelise, a naturally sensitive girl, felt pressured to atone for the sins of others around her, including sleeping on the floor as penance for drug addicts who themselves slept on the ground. So see, this is a little dramatic, but
jeez,
like she was one of those, apparently.
That's what, right? Like children who grow up in extremely religious environments do have like, I don't know, like most people that I know who've grown up in very religious households, very religious from my standard, so it's nothing quite so extreme, obviously. But there is a lot of guilt that they carry with them, mm-hmm. just about like normal day-to-day things.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this is not something I should be indulging in. And I'm like, you're literally just living, like this is not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this family setting would only serve as a launchpad for a real-life nightmare by the time Annelise was diagnosed with both physical and mental disorders as a teenager. Annelise began experiencing blackouts at the age of 16 in 1968. At first, she would walk around in a trance, unaware of what she was doing, or wet the bed. Soon, she was experiencing convulsions. A neurologist diagnosed her with temporal lobe epilepsy, which can cause seizures, memory loss, and hallucinations. Furthermore, it can cause a disorder known as... Oh, God. Geschwind, I want to say. G-E-S-C-H-W-I-N-D syndrome, which causes one to act in an excessively religious manner.
Hey guys, thought I'd just pop in to provide some clarity on this topic. So Geschwind syndrome, or some people even say Geschwind, it's a characteristic behavioral syndrome frequently described in patients affected by temporal lobe epilepsy, and it consists of the following features: hyperreligiosity, hypergraphia, hyposexuality, and also irritability. This definition was given in a paper in 2017 by Veronelli and Associates. So if you are interested in knowing more, you can definitely do some more research into this. Some even characterize this as a collective group of behavioral tendencies associated with temporal lobe epilepsy. So it is not a syndrome that is dedicated towards hyper-religious tendencies. Hyper-religious tendencies are a side effect of the syndrome as a result of temporal lobe epilepsy. Anyways, proceed on with your listening.
She began to take medication for her epilepsy and enrolled in the University of Wurzburg in 1973. So she did get a little better. However, despite her treatment, her condition worsened and she fell into a deep depression and considered suicide soon after. She heard voices telling her that she was damned and saw the face of the devil around her. It was then that she became convinced that she was possessed by a demon. Others first became convinced of Annalise's possession when she could not walk past a certain image of Jesus while on pilgrimage, refused to drink holy water, and gave off a strong hellish smell. I did some research into what hellish smell means. Apparently, it's the smell of burnt feces.
Oh.
And that's very specific, and I don't know what that smells like, so I can't comment on it. But yeah, burnt feces. She started smelling of burnt feces, and that's all she could smell because she was giving off the stench, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
An exorcist from a town nearby confirmed her possession, but Annalise's request for exorcism was denied. Once, but twice. Yeah. The response was that the bishop had to approve the rite, which he did not. Unfortunately for all those involved, it wouldn't take long before the bishop and priest changed their minds. In July of 1975, her condition got worse. She barely slept, and she ate spiders, flies, and coal. And she even licked urine from the floor. Her own urine.
Why did that rhyme? Did you purposely make that rhyme?
Shut up, really? I did not know
it. It kind of did rhyme.
Nice. I am just a poet, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thank you.
And it's like my genius sometimes. It scares me.
No.
She couldn't look at any crucifix and she tore holy pictures from the walls. She began showing abnormal behavior and used to tear her own clothes, crawl beneath her table, and then bark. She once behaved like a dog under the table for 2 whole days.
I mean, honestly, good for girls.
At least all...
Like, it's fine. Live your best
life. My god, Tanvi.
That's Tanvi.
just the dog.
See, part. I know what's coming next, so I can't even say anything, but... I mean, if you guys want to go around act like a dog, just honestly go do it.
Live your best life.
There's a difference between like you choose like consciously and are aware consciously that you're acting like a dog, and also
That's valid.
That's being being that's like mentally unwell and physically unwell, and then acting like a dog. So
honestly, valid. Annalise also exhibited.
Thank you for validating that.
And I quote. Close to superhuman strength, according to her sister. And it was as if, and I quote again, she was a ragdoll. So basically, Annalise used to pick up her sister and throw her around the room as if she were a ragdoll.
I find that image funny. I'm so sorry.
Oh my god, Tanvi.
Tanvi, you're doing very good today. You're just amazing.
It just reminds me of Jian from Doraemon.
Oh, that's so funny.
No.
Remember when he'd like pick up Nobita and spin him around and throw him?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my god.
In the next episode, was Jian possessed by a demon?
Jian was a demon. That fucker was horrible. I hated him.
No, I think Sonya
was
Nobita
was kind of irritating. I liked Sonya. He was just, he was rich and he knew it. Like, he was like, I got the money and I know I got the money.
Yeah, but he used to like psychologically torment people. Jian was just all brawn, right? Sonya was like, I'm gonna be a nasty bitch.
You know who was nice? Deki Sugi. We stand.
Deki Sugi is, yeah. Everybody stands.
Anyways, Annalise Michelle, no.
Fuck both of you.
Speaking of her superhuman strength, she was once even seen squeezing an apple in one hand while fragments exploded throughout the room. And
which, you know, after I heard that,
for the record, I tried this and it does not work.
It is so difficult to crush an apple. With just one hand. And then I tried two hands. It's so difficult.
I learned the trick as to how to break an apple with two hands. But when I asked my mom if I could do it, she said that I'd have to eat the apple. And it was like 9 p.m. so I didn't do it. But I saw a YouTube video about it, so I can probably do it.
Like, it was 9 p.m. so I do it now.
I already had an apple. I'm so sorry. Oh no, don't restart my computer. Sorry.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Okay, so Father Rodwick, an expert in exorcisms, was convinced that Annalise was possessed, and he even compared her symptoms with schizophrenia.
Wait, so schizophrenia or possession?
That sounds like he's like relating the two, like they're one and the same thing.
I mean, I guess
at the time.
This is already 1970, dude. 1970s weren't the dark ages, because in 1973, she went to college, right? She went to, like, university. So this must have been after that.
You're forgetting how extremely religious, those who were involved in religion, they were extremely religious. So, yeah, we'll get into this more later, but you have to keep in mind that even in 1970s, literally just 50 years ago, people were very religious if they had a faith. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. It was a general demographic. It wasn't just this family.
Plus, I'm pretty sure lobotomies were still being performed in the 1970s.
The last one was in the 1970s, yes.
Yeah. So, it wouldn't be a surprise if people were like, yep, that's still a good measure of, like, saving somebody from whatever, whatnot stuff.
Mm. Damn. Okay. So, although an old woman who diagnosed Annalise at first claimed that she's possessed, she went to examine her and took her to a pilgrimage and observed how Annalise was refusing anything holy near her. And again, said that Annalise smelled hellishly bad. See, I get the most of it, but like hellishly bad is... Couldn't that just so be because specific, she wasn't taking care of her personal hygiene?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure because she was also diagnosed
and she's
with depression.
But she's licking urine off the floor.
In the middle,
clearly,
yeah.
Her mental state
and eating bugs. She's probably and the whole burning smell. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know about the burning smell, but like the feces smell makes sense to me. I wouldn't be surprised if she's like defecating like in the like on the spot that she's standing at. Like that wouldn't surprise me. But I'm pretty sure they wouldn't like document that.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, so at first, the church denied to help Annalise. However, Pastor Ault gave evidences of possession to Bishop Joseph Stang... I don't know how to pronounce this, I'm so sorry. Let's just call him Bishop Joseph. Along with a written letter written by Annalise to the bishop, explaining that she wanted to suffer for other people. The bishop approved of Catholic exorcism in accordance with the
Rituale Romanum
of 1614, led by a priest named Arnold Renz. On September 24th, 1975, the first exorcism was performed. For the record, she went through 67 exorcisms. 67, that's very heavy, because each exorcism lasts around 5 hours, and it's nothing but mental and physical torture.
I think the last one lost like 70 hours. Or something like that.
I'm giving you an average estimate, yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
So Father Renz and Father Ault allowed some of the exorcism treatments to be recorded. In the exorcism sessions, they tried to reveal the demons that possessed Annalise. In one session, Judas explained that Hitler is unlikable in hell since he has a habit of bragging.
Hello again. The following audio is a snippet of one of Annalise's exorcisms. The additional voice that you will hear is that of the priest exorcising her. The whole thing is in German, so if you do want subtitles and a full version of all of the exorcisms, go ahead and check out Planet Weird's video on YouTube. It is 1 hour 30 minutes long with English subtitles. And if this is something you wish to not listen to, there will be a pause after this disclaimer to allow you to skip the next 45 seconds. Listener discretion is advised.
Teile des Tiermoor, Teile
private solution.
So, Annalise mentioned the names of the demons that possessed her: Judas, Nero, Cain, Hitler, Belial, and Lucifer himself. So, she also mentioned another demon who was named Valentin Fleischmann. This is the only part that actually makes me, you know, like, huh, because this is the only unexplained thing here. Valentin Fleischmann was an old priest who was, I think, excommunicated from his church, and literally no one knew of this. They had to go back into church records from like bloody 16th century to find this. There was honestly no way that she could have known, which is the only thing that's kind of scary. Other than that, I mean, everyone knows Hitler was, well, Hitler, and everyone knows who Cain was. So she just named like bad people off the top of her head, like all those she could imagine, from what I can say. The only one that's kind of a question mark is Fleischmann, which I just told you the story for. Also, she provided some accurate details about the real Fleischmann, which was not known to the church until, again, the extreme, you know, history digging. So she talked about many damned souls who had exhibited themselves through her. Although as a Catholic, she knew that taking one's own life is an unforgivable sin, she did try to take her life at times. By May of 1976, Annalise's condition got worse and she started biting herself. Her family had to tie her up, and more dangerously, she refused to eat and was not being permitted to eat by those inside her. She weighed less than 80 pounds, which I guess is something around 30-something kgs. Yet, she still exhibited great strength. So, apple exploding, sister throwing. Yeah.
Yeah.
By June of 1976, Annalise's entire face had sunk in and she refused to visit a doctor even though she had extremely high fever.
There were like these bruises on her face that's just actually just so scary to look at.
It's not even, that's the thing, they're not even bruises, they're just malnourishment.
Oh, right, yes, so I'm so sorry. Yeah,
her
it's
eyes have sunk in and her face has sunk
because,
in.
It
looks like she has a black eye, but she does not. And she was a very beautiful girl. Like, I've seen the portrait of her from when she was younger before this started. And she was very beautiful. So, yeah, just it's a little disturbing seeing the transition. On June 30th, 1976, Annalise had another exorcism, only saying, "Please, absolution." Her last words to her mother, Anna, were, "Mother, I'm afraid."
Yeah.
And adding to, like, I actually took out some stuff because it was really, really gory. But Annalise, like, to further torture herself, it wasn't just licking urine, eating spiders. This was almost comical to me when I first read it, but when I actually let it sink in, it was horrifying. She did approximately 600 squats a day.
Wow.
And this was to tear the ligaments in her knees.
No.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
She was extremely out of it, and she did a lot of stuff that would harm herself. Again, the biting, the hitting herself, just slamming her head against doors and windows and walls. It was horrific.
But okay, so, did they think this was the demon doing it, or was this her punishing herself for being possessed?
I think it's a combination. It's a combination.
Okay.
So the urine licking and everything, that's not her. But then she apparently wanted to atone for those around her, which is why she used to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't remember where I read this, but I don't remember if it was a priest who said it or if she said it. But it was said that, like, this has happened, this possession, everything had happened, and she's the one that will be taking it on and, like, experiencing it all, is to atone for, to compensate for like drug dealers, homeless drug dealers, and sinners, and bad priests and stuff like that to compensate for them. Like that specifically was there.
Okay. The next morning, she was found dead in her room. She died at the age of 23 after 67 exorcisms, which had ruptured the ligaments of her knees due to the 600 squats that she did every single day within a period of 10 months. Reports said that the time she died, she only weighed 68 pounds, which is 30 kgs. For context, I know kids who are 7 years old and weigh more than that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And how old was she? How old was she?
She was 23.
Fuck. That's really sad.
She was suffering from pneumonia and high fever, and she died due to starvation and malnutrition. So in 1978, Mr. and Mrs. Michelle, along with Father Renz and Father Ault, were accused of committing homicide. Negligent homicide, I believe. I'm not too sure, but yeah. And the case had to go to trial. As defense, they presented eyewitness testimony, audio recordings of the exorcism, and about the medical treatment, priests said that it might have included electroshock therapy, force feeding, and even tranquilizing against her will. That was their defense. They said if you did electrotherapy to her and all that stuff, it would have been against her will, but then she might have lived. So, what can you say? So now this, Sunithi and I actually tried looking for a source, but we could not find it. In her autopsy, it was revealed that Annalise had a healthy brain and there's no such symptom that could cause an epileptic seizure, not even on a microscopic level. So, I can't find a proper source for this, but I have seen it here and there on one or two websites.
Hi, we really have to stop bumping into each other like this. Okay, that got weird. But anyways, so at first I thought we were talking shit, as per usual, because on the initial search I didn't find anything. But there was an article. There actually was an article. So, on July 30th, 2021, J.D. Sword on skepticalinquirer.com wrote an article called Seized by the Spirit, Temporal Lobe Epilepsy and the Exorcism of Annalise Michelle, which now that I say it out loud is a very interesting title. But anyways, in this article, Sword mentions, near the end, about the debate that's going around Annalise's medical state during the time of the quote-unquote possessions. Sword talks about a statement that was made by anthropologist Felicitas Goodman in 1981 on the lack of any mental illness within Annalise, and that all of it was manifestations of a intense religious experience. And Sword actually disagrees with this and highlights that there were many EEGs done alongside Annalise's autopsy, which showed no abnormal activity. However, that was not an uncommon occurrence. So Sword also brings in a statistic that 1 in 4 cases of temporal lobe epilepsy tend to have unknown causes. So there you have it. We were not shit talking. We do have sources.
Even after examination, there was no such sign of ulcers on her body, which is frequently found in victims of starvation. So, according to the prosecution, the drugs that were prescribed by the neurologist had the side effect of depression and suicidal thoughts. And due to several exorcism rites, Annalise started believing that she had demons inside of her. Prosecution also claimed that if suspects had tried to force feed her, even a week before her death, she would have survived.
Yeah, a lot of it became like, no, she is possessed. Like, she is possessed. Like, we can't do anything.
No, like, you have to see it in a way. And also, like, fear. If someone's ill, like, someone's genuinely ill, you have to take care of them. You can't expect them to take care of themselves. And I personally do believe that Annalise was very, very ill, at least by the end of it.
I mean, yeah, clearly. But then again, that's the thing, right? They were very religious. So their belief system is entirely different. Like, a lot of very religious people don't even believe in modern medicine. So you have to, and that's today. This was 50 years ago. So that's an entirely separate conversation.
Yeah. So at the end of this, the court went on favor of the prosecution and sentenced her parents and Father Renz and Father Ault to 6 months in prison and 3 years suspension for the priests and payment for all court costs, which isn't a lot, but like, I mean, like, see, in their beliefs, they were doing what was
that's what they believe would help her. Yeah, that's why it's tough to prosecute these people.
They right? never because wanted they to kill her. Like, yeah it's
they
very
didn't intentionally cause
yeah.
her. But they did kill her.
So. And that's the thing, like, okay, the exorcisms were brutal, I'll say that. But here's the thing, like, the exorcisms aren't what killed her. It was malnourishment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't really tell them that you killed your daughter, at least directly. There were a lot of other factors.
Okay, a lot of times people just really want somebody to blame.
But they actively killed her by neglect.
Yeah it was called negligent homicide. The court ruled that Annalise was unable to make decisions for herself and should have been forced to submit to medical care.
No, 100%.
On February 25th, 1978, after 2 years of her death, her body was dug up and moved to a new casket lined with tin. Reports said that an old nun had mentioned and had a vision about Annalise's body being extremely, like, intact without any signs of decomposition. And hence, her parents moved her deceased body. After that, they weren't allowed to go in front of the grave, but it is still visible from the window of their house.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. That is so sad.
It is, yeah.
Why would you want your child's grave to be visible?
Also, for the record, the nun's vision was wrong. Her body was decomposed. Yeah
no shit, sure. Of course her body's gonna decompose years after her death.
This is just a...
No, they want to make it into this whole, like, myth, this whole urban legend. This poor girl died because people didn't... they either didn't know what to do or they just didn't want to do the right thing was.
Her family failed her. That's what happened to her. Quite literally. Yeah. Like, she died of neglect. They failed to give her the care she needed.
Her family and even her doctors and all, like...
I will say that I did, like, one thing was interesting to me. At first... it was mostly like me realization that I thought they didn't even look to the medical side, but that was the first thing that was like done. Like, they like diagnosed a bunch of different things. She had temporal lobe epilepsy. Yeah. She had depression. She had a lot of seizures. And she was taking medication for all of it, but they weren't doing anything, right? Mm. And you'd think that they'd keep searching for more like doctors or like to like help out my daughter, like what's going on. But eventually some like family relative on a pilgrimage or something like that, right, had said like, oh yeah, go for this like exorcism basically, or like she definitely has demons in her, and they followed that narrative, which I get
everything
like,
that could have gone wrong did go wrong. Yeah. It's one of those situations.
Yeah, it's like, I think like the most you can say is like, yeah, they were definitely afraid and that they became desperate. But even then, it's like, you can't just quit on your kid
and,
like that.
I actually wanted to bring this up. So while I was reading upon, this whole topic, there's one thing that her grave is kind of decorated. People who visit the town of Germany that she was in, go visit her grave. And she's almost seen as like, I don't know how
an
to like...
urban legend?
No, a religious idol of sorts. Like, you know, she gave her life to atone for our sins. That's apparently a thing.
No, that's so beyond. Yeah.
That's so interesting to me.
Don't make a fucking martyr out of her. First of all, that's not. She died because of parental neglect and because her medical staff failed her as well, and the fucking priest.
Yeah, so it's kind of like they're seeing her as, I told you, right? So in the beginning, if you go back to then, even when she was perfectly fine, she used to like prefer sleeping on the floor and all to kind of help her. You know, fellow brothers and sisters or whatever who were drug addicts. Obviously, when she got ill, this was amplified. Half the things that she was consciously doing were because she believed that this will help atone for others' sins.
Because that's the other thing. So I did a little bit of research into like temporal lobe epilepsy, the specific one she had. And the one big part of it is that you have these hallucinations. And with those hallucinations, they can vary, right? They can be audio hallucinations, they can be visual hallucinations, and they can be completely abstract. So you have this extreme sense of like, this is what's really happening. A lot of people attribute that to like paranoia. In her case, it was definitely like she genuinely, in her case, probably, sorry, I can't even like make a lot of like assumptions about this, but like, in her case, probably it was that she genuinely believed that she was possessed by these demons and that she had to like make up and atone for other people's sins, which, and of course with the exorcisms and with these like priests, like priest Ernst Alt, right? Like he made the statement, and I just recently found it. He made the statement where he said like, she don't look epileptic.
Oh,
and that just further cemented it. Yeah, he was like, she don't look epileptic. And he was like, you have to do an exorcism. She's possessed by demons. And that further pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And this poor girl didn't get as much help as she should have gotten. Another big thing is that the medication, because of course I searched into the medication that she was on, right? And a lot of the side effects of each of those medications are very similar to like the stuff that people said like she was doing. And about the urine and stuff, I think that was genuinely just like something related to like her psychosis. So I have no idea about that. But the convulsions, the headaches, the irritation, the gruff voice, the fatigue and everything. It's like a lot of the side effects of those medications, especially combined, must have caused a lot of those things. But of course, since they didn't go to more doctors, that didn't change. So she was stuck on those medications, and eventually she stopped.
The medication she was taking wasn't helping her, but the doctor's diagnosis was kind of on the dot. Like, there was nothing wrong with it. Even the Geschwind's syndrome, which I just kind of read the definition of. So basically, excessive verbal output and an intensified mental life. So what that means is that she has a deepened cognitive and emotional response. And it's basically like if, say, you used to get a little sad when, say, you saw a character die on your TV show. If you had this, you would be full-blown tears, like, I can't believe this character died. It's like you would treat them as if they were your family.
Now imagine that combined with your hallucinations where you believe you atone for people's sins. That is going to be insane to compensate for. Exactly. Insane. It's just so sad, honestly. And of course people are going to like turn this into like a whole like story of like, she was possessed, and it makes it so like insane. And a lot of people, like a bunch of articles that you will go to, right? I think the great thing about like some sites like Wikipedia and like this other site, can't think of many sites right now, but like there are some sites that like are very matter of fact about it, right? They're not gonna say like what people would like to hear. They're gonna say what was definitely factual, right? And but then a lot of sites you go to, they'll like omit these like little tidbits of like, yeah, there was no explanation, or like this, or they'll vaguely drop in like, oh, she might have had some sort of epilepsy. Like, they won't tell the specifics of it. And that's so like dangerous. You need to tell her like her story properly.
Honestly, that was again something that I was thinking of doing until I actually read into it. See, a lot of people just for content make it into a scary story. That's how I first heard it. That's what I thought I was gonna get once I started researching. But when I actually got into it, I realized that this wasn't a scary story. It was just
a very sad
a lot
one.
That went on. And honestly, speaking on the whole mental health thing that Sunidhi mentioned before, I'm pretty much a strong believer of placebo. So having these many issues and then have everyone around you, everyone you trust and respect, tell you that something is correct, that something's actually wrong with you, it just enforces it in your brain. And then it's like the kind of thing where you're like, oh no, I'm gonna do this, you know, like just a whole spiral, and you never come out of it. You kind of stay there.
When she was like, I think studying, I don't exactly remember where she was studying, but like while she was studying, while her like colleagues, they would like go out to party and stuff like that, she would be in her dorm room. She would be like praying, because, and a lot of people thought like, oh, she's just super devoted to her religion. But a lot of people speculate that she was actually, that was like when it's like, it was heightened, that the delusions and everything were like heightening. And so she was like, God help me. Why is all this happening to me? Why am I thinking all these things? Why am I, you know, hearing all these things? Why do I feel all this? And she just thought if she prayed more often, that would like fix things. But then that all quickly changed. So
it's like the one thing you can turn to for some form of, you know, like relief becomes the issue of your, you know, like the sole cause of your torment. That's I think.
Plus, imagine going to like your friend, going to your friend from your class, and you're just like, listen, man, I genuinely in my head, I feel like I have to atone for everybody's sins. That's insane to hear. And I really don't know, in the 1970s, at least. It's, of course, it's not like the Dark Ages. But like, even then, it's like very hard to like tell people stuff like that, I imagine.
It really is. Anyways, let's move on to the second case I have. And this is the Orsett Exorcist murder. And I am just going to put this out here before we start. This is graphic. This is one of the most disgusting crime scenes I have ever heard of. It was disturbing. It's just a small paragraph, and I think Sunidhi will put a warning just before that. So I'm just letting you know this is gory.
Okay, is it disgusting in a human centipede kind of way, or is it disgusting in a somebody got essayed kind of way?
A human centipede and essayed. Not essayed exactly, but just it's disturbing. We'll get to it. Anyways, so this is the Orsett Exorcist murder. Again, 1970s, not that long ago. In 1974, in a case that shocked the nation, a particularly violent and shocking murder was committed by a peaceful and loving family man who was overcome with either by inner demons or literal ones. So this is, honestly, I read this entire thing off of a site called The True Crime Enthusiast. It was an interesting read. I've obviously edited it down a little so we can fit it into the episode, but if you would like, go for it. So Orsett is a small town near the city of Wakefield in the English country of West Yorkshire. How do you pronounce this place?
Yorkshire.
I'm sorry.
Whatever. Yorkshire. What is it? Yorkshire? Yorkshire?
I think it's Yorkshire. Yorkshire.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's Yorkshire.
Cool. So in the English county of West Yorkshire, and the kind of town that wouldn't really strike most people as a sort of place where a sensational, bloody, horrific murder really happened. Neither would you expect the talk of exorcisms and demonic possession to stem from. This is where the story begins. The Taylor family called Orsett their home in 1974, and this family consisted of 31-year-old Michael Taylor, his wife Christine, and their 5 children, as well as a family dog. The family and their home was considered mostly a cheerful and happy one by their friends and neighbors, and Michael in particular was described by those who knew him as mild-mannered, but generally kind and a loving father and a loving husband. It was noted, however, that he would sometimes be prone to minor bouts of depression, the cause of which had been due to a severe back injury he had received many years ago, and it had left him with chronic pain and an inability to find long-term employment. So again, understandable given the time, 1974, it was still very, the man has to fend for his family, and having such a large family and not being able to keep a solid job, you can see why he would go through episodes of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from this observation, nothing else seemed to be amiss or unusual about the Taylor household. At the time, Orsett had a highly religious population and most people regularly attended church, but the Taylors had never been particularly devout and mostly skipped church whenever they could, basically. So in a belief that Michael's periods of depression could be somehow eased with a spiritual intervention, a friend of Michael's called Barbara Wardman took it upon herself to introduce him to a church group called the Christian Fellowship Group, which was led by 21-year-old pastor Marie Robinson. Michael had previously been decently non-religious. He soon started attending regular meetings of this group, and he soon became an active member of the congregation. He became well acquainted with their teachings and quickly fell under the spell of the charismatic Marie Robinson. So again, most people have described Marie to be extremely charming, just a great orator. And at the age of 21, she's the head of a big congregation. Mm-hmm. You have to give her that. People just generally trusted her. So Michael began spending what seemed like an inappropriate amount of time with Robinson. Again, this is a quote.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I don't know what an inappropriate time is, but yeah. So attending more and more meetings and gatherings of the group, and joined Robinson in congregations where they would, and I quote, use the power of God to exorcise people of their sins, and they used to speak in tongues.
Jeez.
So just putting it out there, speak in tongues is, it's not an actual language. It's when people start just saying stuff that no one can understand. This is apparently the language of God or something like that. I generally don't know much about speaking in tongues, so it's supposed to be speaking to God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
at least some deity. nothing human. That's basically what
It's not a proper language. Like, it's not a language which has a full, you know, grammatical syntax or has proper words. It's just you speak.
Yeah.
So they also began to engage in private rituals in which both Michael and Robinson would stay up all night making the sign of the cross at each other. Which is a little weird.
Yeah, what?
like a crucifix. They would make a cross towards each other all night.
Okay.
To ward off what they believed was the evil power of the full moon.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
In fact, it kind of became clear to the congregation that Michael had become rather enamored with Robinson. Unsurprisingly, Michael's attitude at home towards his family began to change as a result.
Okay.
He was spending less and less time at home with them, and when he was there, he was sullen, irritable, and very argumentative. This was a total character change from the easygoing and I quote, mild-mannered way that Michael had mm-hmm. once been. And the assumption from the church group was that he was somehow exerting a negative influence on him. The character change had increasingly bizarre beliefs, erratic behavior, and a bad attitude. So everyone who knew him said these three things about him. But most notably mm-hmm. to Christine Taylor, his wife, she thought that Michael had a crazy infatuation with Robinson. That was her belief. Like, he was just in love with her and he had forgotten about his family because he was so charmed by Robinson. During one congregation, Christine suddenly decided to publicly confront Michael about his relationship with Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go girl. And openly accused him in front of people of being unfaithful. So now, if this already didn't sound bad or strange enough, it was at this point where Michael's behavior took a turn for the worse. Michael is reported to have felt an evil influence cast a shadow over him, and this is a quote, and then compelled by this force, vented a sudden fury on, surprisingly not on Christine, but on Robinson. So he lashed out at her verbally and physically to the point that several other churchgoers in the congregation had to physically restrain him, fearing that he would seriously hurt himself or someone else. Perhaps a good example of the religious mania that was running through the group, Marie Robinson herself later testified as to what happened when Michael attacked her. She said, "I suddenly glanced at Michael and his whole features changed. He looked almost bestial. He kept looking at me and there was really a kind of wild look in his eyes. I started screaming at him out of fear. I started speaking in tongues. Michael also screamed at me in tongues. I was on the verge of death and that's when I seemed to come to my senses. I knew that only the name of Jesus would save me and I just started saying it over and over and over again. When Christine heard me calling on the name of Jesus, she started saying it too and I believe firmly that it was only by calling on his name that I was not killed." So yeah, that's an exact quote from what Marie had told others after this case happened. Michael would later claim to have no memory of this incident.
Okay.
It soon became apparent that his deteriorating out-of-character behavior seemed to now be permanent. And the fact that this was getting worse as time went on was just further instance of what was going on. His sanity was clearly slipping. The seriousness and frightening condition that Michael was in was so severe that local ministers became involved and came to the realization that Michael might be under the influence of demonic forces.
Okay.
So finally, the local priests came to the controversial conclusion that an exorcism should be performed on Michael. Two ministers by the name of Father Peter Vincent and the Reverend Raymond Smith were brought in to carry it out, and the exorcism was set to happen for midnight on the 5th of October 1974 at St. James Church in Barnsley. That night, in front of the congregation of the Christian Fellowship Group, the two ministers began the harrowing ritual, which would prove to last throughout the night and well into next morning. As soon as the exorcism started, Michael went into an uncontrollable convulsion and started having fits of scratching, spitting, biting, which required him to be tied forcefully to the floor. I don't know how you can tie someone to the floor, but they did.
Tell me a change.
Okay, yeah, that's possible. Over the next 8 hours, Michael was subjected to all sorts of indignities, such as having crucifixes shoved into his mouth or being doused with holy water.
Oh,
all priests in charge of the exorcism claimed that the ceremony had managed to ascertain that there were about 40 demons inside Michael's body. For comparison, Annalise had 7. They said he had 40 demons inside of him, representing traits such as incest, bestiality, blasphemy, lewdness, heresy, masochism, carnal knowledge, among many others. As one can imagine, these alleged demons did not go easily for Michael, each one having to be reportedly dragged out, kicking and screaming. After 8 hours of this, by 8 a.m. on October 6, 1974, the priest carrying out the exorcism could no longer continue because of exhaustion. Understandably so. I'm sure shoving crucifixes into people's mouths and, you know, dousing them with holy water would take a toll. Strangely, it was decided that the exorcism would have to be finished at a later time. Although the priest claimed that three demons, those of insanity, anger and murder, were still stubbornly possessing Michael and had not yet been successfully removed. You would think these were the worst ones, but, you know. Apparently, the congregation who had been present for the exorcism agreed in part, for one witness to the terrifying events, a minister's wife named Margaret Smith, who was about to claim later that she had received a warning in her mind from what she believed to be God, saying that the demon of murder was going to escape from Michael and kill Christine. She pleaded with the two priests to complete the exorcism, but they dismissed her warnings and instead told Michael and Christine to go home to rest and prepare for the next day and to finish the final part of the exorcism, which was to be performed the following day. What would follow the next day was nothing short of pure evil and insanity. So I would like to point out here, the five children were actually sent over to their aunt's house while this was happening. So it was about 9:45 the next morning, October 7th, 2 hours after Michael and Christine had been sent home to rest and prepare for the next part of the exorcism, that a police patrol car passing through the normally quiet streets of Orsett came upon a shocking and unnerving sight. Coming out of the corner, the officer in the car, PC Ian Walker, was confronted by the sight of a man stumbling around in the middle of the street naked, covered head to toe in blood.
Jesus fuck.
His body was slicked with it. Stopping the car and approaching the man, PC Walker saw the man curl into a fetal position and heard him ranting and screaming over and over, "It's the blood of Satan."
Oh my god.
Oh god.
That's terrifying.
This is...
Yeah.
The following 2 minutes are a description of how the crime scene was found and what had happened during it. If this is something you want to avoid listening to, as it is quite graphic, there will be a blank space after these 2 minutes that you can jump to and avoid listening to any part of it. There will be a short non-graphic description waiting for you at the end of those 2 minutes. So, once again, listener discretion is heavily advised.
So, unsurprisingly, this had attracted a crowd of onlookers, some of which knew the disturbed man. It was Michael Taylor. PC Walker, upon arrival at the Taylor house, was surprised and perhaps apprehensive to find a police car over there already, which he later found out had been summoned for by frightened neighbors who had heard a commotion. PC Walker approached the house, but was stopped by the sight of his inspector emerging from the front door, bending over and vomiting. So the inspector said, "You don't want to see this, son. I've seen nothing like it before, and I've seen a few. It's the wife. She's got no..." He's ripped at her, son. "It's a right mess in there. There's not much of her left. You really don't want to see it." Feeling that he had to go in, PC Walker stepped into the Taylor house and was to see exactly what shook his inspector. The interior of the front room was destroyed, with signs of destruction apparent even from a cursory look. Blood covered every single surface of the room, along with flesh, pulp, and brain matter. And on the floor of the living room lay the bodies of Christine Taylor and their family pet dog, almost unrecognizable. The blood that had covered Michael Taylor was Christine's blood. At about 9:30 that morning, in the Taylor family home, Michael had killed his wife Christine, the woman that he loved, and the mother of his children. In a maniacal and deranged attack, Michael had stripped off and strangled Christine and nearly torn off her face. There was no murder weapon involved. He had gouged out her eyes and ripped out her tongue with his bare hands, tearing the rest of her face down to the bone, so much so that she was left unrecognizable. Whilst Christine died of shock and choked on her own blood, thankfully it was a quick death, Michael had turned his attentions to the Taylor pet dog, strangling it and ripping it limb from limb. He had torn its legs from the sockets and hair and teeth and eyes from the skull. He then left the house screaming and was found by PC Walker a short time later. So it was described as being the most horrific crime scene that any police officer had seen in that area. A summary for those who skipped the last few minutes. Basically, Michael had killed his wife and his dog very brutally in their house. Michael was taken into police custody from the hospital, and when interviewed some hours later, when he was deemed rational enough to talk, he was asked to try to explain what had happened. He told the detective, Inspector Brian Smith, about the exorcism that had occurred only hours before, saying, "It was a long night. They danced around me and burned my cross because that was tainted with evil. They had me in the church all night. Look at my hands. I was banging the floor. The power was in me. I couldn't get rid of it, and neither could they. They were too late. I was compelled by a force within me to destroy everything living within the house." Although Michael claimed he remembered nothing of the actual murder, claiming to deeply love his wife, and when asked by D.I. Smith how he felt, Michael replied, "Released. I'm released. It's done. The evil in her has been destroyed."
Oh my fucking god.
Michael Taylor's trial for the murder of his wife began in March of 1975, and upon its commencing, the jury were advised by the barrister for the prosecution, Mr. Jeffrey Baker QC, that the evidence they were about to hear will make it difficult to believe that you are not back in the Middle Ages. So this is a quote from him. Neither prosecution nor defense denied at the trial that Michael Taylor had severe mental issues. Michael himself testified, again claiming that he had no recollection of the actual killing, and that he deeply loved his wife and had been under the control of evil supernatural forces, that he suspected that Christine had also been possessed by demons. He offered no other explanation. The entire linchpin of his defense was the discrediting of the Christian Fellowship group and the Anglican Methodist priest who had carried out the exorcism. So basically, from the defense, they claimed that the Christian Fellowship prayer group was actually more of a fanatical cult and had managed to influence Michael by using potent mind control and indoctrination, feeding his already existing mental issues. At one point, he described the group as neurotics, feeding neurosis to a neurotic. Blame was also apportioned to the exorcism itself. The prosecution claimed that the ritual had taken its toll on an already mentally disturbed man, and coupled with the warped religious ideals and beliefs that the prayer group instilled in him, these negative influences had pushed Michael over the edge into a realm of madness and murder. The defense made an impassioned personal statement during the trial that illustrated just how much responsibility the church was viewed to have held in the horrific crime, saying, "I'm aware that it is generally regarded as an improper for an advocate to express any personal feeling or opinion about the case in which he is engaged. I'm afraid I find it quite impossible to observe such constraints in this particular case. Let those who truly are responsible for this killing stand up. We submit that Taylor is a mere cipher. The real guilt lies elsewhere. Religion is the key. Those who have been referred to in evidence, and those clerics in particular, should be with him in spirit now in this building, and each day he is incarcerated in Broadmoor, and not at least on the day he must endure the bitter reunion with his five motherless children." So he blamed the priests, the religion, the church group for all, like, you know, making a mentally disturbed man even more mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
The jury found Michael Taylor not guilty of the murder of his wife by the reason of insanity. Deemed to be both clinically and legally insane, he was sent to Broadmoor Secure Hospital, where he would remain for 2 years, followed by another 2-year sentence at the Bradford Royal Infirmary before being released back into the world, apparently cured.
I mean, yeah, but I think they're supposed to, like, he's supposed to be,
like, he just got 4 years.
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be treated as well during that process, like, at some institute. There's no way that he would not go to an institute. But, like, that's, you know, that's, I just realized, I was, like, trying to, like, research on this, like, any, like, sort of diagnosis of his, like, with Annalise, like, at least there was some sort of, like, thing that
there was nothing sense. For him. Everyone but just straight went to religion. There's nothing,
and I was, like, doing a bit of research on, like, you know, like, psychotic depression or, like, this, like, impulsive disorders, explosive disorders, stuff like that. But now I'm, like, fully aligned with, like, this thing. So it just actually frustrates me that, like, nobody was like, oh yeah, he has moments, and these moments of, like, falling into depressive episodes, but yeah, that's it. Like, oh, he gets sad sometimes, let's move on. It's genuinely, like, so unfortunate, so sad that he didn't get the help that he genuinely should have.
No, don't feel, like, bad, it gets worse. Throughout the trial and in the years following it, the chief priest who had been in charge of Michael's exorcism, Father Peter Vincent, continued to insist that Michael Taylor had indeed been inhabited by demons, and that the Orsett case had indeed been an authentic case of demonic possession. He said, "God will bring out good of this in his own way." A lady and a dog passed away, but sure.
No, they didn't just pass away. They were horrifically murdered. Like, passing away is such a gentle phrase, right?
True. It was only Peter Vincent's partner in exorcism, the Reverend Raymond Smith, that seemed to admit that the situation had not been handled well and the exorcism had indeed failed. He was quoted saying, "If people come to me in trouble of any kind, I will try to help. I would give such comfort as I could, but I am only an ordinary human being with human failings." At least he admits it, you know?
Yeah, at least he's aware. Yeah. That's a good thing.
But well, is it enough is the real question. Yeah. No, it's not.
What then became of the main player in this horrific story? After his release from the hospital, it is reported that Michael Taylor went back to live in Orsett, although no one can imagine what the relationship he would have had with his children and his neighbors after such a horror. Michael would continue to display odd behavior and suffer bouts of depression, as well as making a total of 4 suicide attempts over the following years. But Michael Taylor would enter the news again in July 2005 when he was arrested for sexually harassing and having inappropriate conduct with an underage girl.
No.
During his court hearing on these charges, Taylor was said to have told the police that it was all his fault and then said, "Am I going to Broadmoor for murdering my wife?" Taylor had spent a week in custody over the sexual assaults, and during this time, the psychiatric problems that existed in 1975 had manifested themselves once again. So upon being bailed, however, they disappeared. This led him to a relatively light sentence of a 3-year stint on community service, but with the condition of psychiatric treatment. PC Ian Walker, when interviewed about the case as one of the officers on the scene after his treatment, said that, "Of all the incidents in which I was involved in 30 years of police work, nothing affected me like this one. The stupidity and the futility of it all, the complete and utter waste of life and the destruction of a family, not to mention the death and other traumas, are far beyond anything I have ever come across. Obviously, my wife asked questions, but there are some things that you just do not take home, and this was one of them. However, within the next 24 to 48 hours, the news hit the national newspapers and the TV news bulletins. You just bury it and get on with your life the best you can. Before this event, I was agnostic, and now I am an atheist."
Holy fucking, oh my god.
How could you not be, right? That's the
this
thing.
This was something else. These are just like, this one, it was no psychiatric help was ever considered. No one ever thought he had mental health issues. No one thought he had, like, just any mental disability. It just went on after 2 years. The crime scene has traumatized. Like, people have PTSD after seeing the crime scene that was there. The police officers that were on scene had to go for therapy after seeing this scene. And the man responsible was just given 2 years in a psychiatric ward.
No, but the fact that they acknowledged...
And again, came out, later claimed that his psychosis came back. No, but then
that's the thing, right? I think 2 years wasn't enough. Clearly, he sexually assaulted a minor.
It wasn't, yeah, exactly.
So clearly, that wasn't enough. But at the same time, you can't, in good conscience and good faith, what's the word I'm looking for? Sunidhi, what's the word I'm looking for? Where somebody is...
Equate? Connect?
No.
Reprimand?
Like, what's the opposite of somebody getting acquitted for a crime?
Let them go.
The opposite of getting... Yeah.
Charged?
Freeing them.
No.
Convict?
Convict. There we go. Convict somebody. Yeah. I was like, what's the... Why am I... No, yeah. Convict somebody with such serious and severe mental health issues with a crime that serious, because technically he was also a victim.
I get that you can't
get the psychiatric help he
needed. He was also a victim, and you can't you can't put him in jail for this, of course, but I don't personally think that 2 years was good enough.
No, it was clearly not enough.
He was an extremely disturbed, given the magnitude of what he did. 2 years was not enough.
Also, it clearly wasn't enough because he went on to sexually assault a minor.
Yeah.
That's proof.
I mean, yeah, then, yeah.
Yeah.
The duality of this case and the Annalise case. Annalise was all her actions that, like, bad actions were upon herself.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael did it to others.
I mean, at least did, like,
throw her sister across the room, but I get what you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, but like, if it's with her siblings, I don't think it doesn't count.
She was just playing with her sister. It's more like the sister would have approached her. But it's like the same as if you're like mentally disturbed or you're sad and someone comes to like, you know, keeps touching your shoulder, like, hey, it's gonna be fine, and you kind of shove them. It was more of that rather than her just like her sister sleeping and she picked her up and started throwing her around. It wasn't that. It was just that like whenever her sister tried, like anyone tried coming close to her, anyone tried touching her, she used to fling them across the room. That was what, yeah.
With Annalise the most is that like, at least there was some like attempt at trying to find the actual reason at first.
There was.
At least there was an attempt.
In this case, it's nowhere.
In this one, it's a complete blind eye. They just completely were like, yeah, this mild-mannered dude. Oh, he does get into extreme depressive episodes though. But anyways, he's a pretty decent family man. And he loves his wife, definitely, even though he's clearly infatuated with this other woman. Like, how can you just throw a blind eye to everything that he's doing? Get that man help. But then they didn't. And this is what fucking happened.
And even the story that, you know, this person has retold. If you notice, the beginning was just about how everything was fine and normal. And this is like a small town.
I mean, they tend to do that. They tend to do that.
No, but the issue is like, just because a town is tiny and quaint, that doesn't mean that
bad things can't
people
happen.
Who are mentally disturbed cannot
That's
be in
what
them.
I'm just because it's a lovely little hamlet doesn't mean that horrible things can't happen there.
No, plus I also feel like a lot of times when people like tell like stories like this of like how like somebody like had this like violently did something and they always like say like, oh, it was all peaceful and nice. Like, no, there were signs. Like, there surely had to be something that you just want to throw a blind eye to. Or you just want to paint it to be this, like, fantastical, like, story of, like let's, like, romanticize this graphic incident. Like, there are always, like, something, there's always something or the other that will hint towards the incident that eventually will happen. So, like, in this case, there was
Sunidhi, that's something. Pretty much the entire premise of Crime Patrol. What you're saying, right? Nice. Yeah. Like, literally, Anoop Soni's line is Savdhan Rahe, Satark Rahe. Like, his entire thing is you need to be vigilant and, like,
yeah.
I love that.
I mean, yeah, and all those, like, true crime documentaries, they always start off with, like, so, this is quaint places, everything's nice. Like, no, all you're doing is feeding paranoia into people. You shouldn't feed paranoia. You need to feed precaution. Like, people need to be cautious of their surroundings. They need to be cautious of like the people around them, stuff like that. Not be fearful of like just because something's calm and serene, whatever, there's bound to be something bad. Like, no, that's not what happens. There's always something. It generally irritates me because you lose the actual story in the process. You lose
also,
the important
tidbits
because of how much people romanticize it.
I want to point out in this, like, I agree we've only done like two Christian cases at the moment, but see, there's exorcisms in almost all religions. It's just that these two have been extremely
well documented
of all the ones that we know.
Yeah.
There's quite a few that are just, they kind of treated like urban legends, whereas in these cases there was an actual proper,
there's due process,
like hearing,
was
there was actual legal exactly. But yeah, exorcisms are there in every single religion, whether like Hinduism and stuff.
Oh, I didn't realize that Hinduism had
It's a practice that, and I quote, you know, bhoot chad gaye is taken literally. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they killed the person that's possessed. Quote,
it's not possession by demons. It's possession by ghosts.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh,
in Hinduism.
Or like bad spirits.
Yeah, I've seen Bhulbhulaiya. Yeah, what am I saying? Yeah.
Oh my God. Manjulika was the cause of all of my nightmares. Damn, that was terrifying.
This is the second time you're mentioning this on
Dude,
the podcast.
No, she was so scary. Great job to the actor.
Although I just I have genuine like food for thought, really. And I'm so curious to know people's like input on this. Do you think that over time the cases of demonic possession have like reduced over time? Or documentation has been reduced?
No,
over
I
time?
Think now people are less likely to believe that somebody acting erratically or having
no but see I think personally for this it's like it was kind of there was no documentation in the dark ages or whatever then it went up like in the 1900s and all when people were kind of like questioning stuff that wasn't like hey religion isn't everything this could just be mental concerns so yeah that's when cases kind of took off and now cases are low again. But, like, apparently the Vatican called extra priests to be trained for exorcisms recently because apparently the demand is rising.
There's a course now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've never personally heard of any demonic... Oh, no, wait, I have. I just had like a flashback. So, I think back when my younger brother wasn't born.
In my exorcism.
In my exorcism. No, my brother wasn't born. So, mom had hired like a cook and stuff to... well, feed us because so she was once talking and I don't know what we were exactly talking about, and she's like, no, ghosts are real and you shouldn't do this, and we were like, okay, bestie, what? And then she went on to tell us that one of her aunts was extremely possessed.
Jeez. Okay, why have you never told us this?
Please, I completely
forgot. What do you mean by extremely possessed? What does
I don't know what that means.
This like mild, this beginner level, this intermediate.
Yeah, she's like, I'm using this extremely possessed. Like, she was the most.
I got premium. Yeah,
this is the premium version of possessed.
Wait, no, is that lady, like, is she fine?
Yeah, she's like, fine. Before I make any other joke.
Okay, good, because I was about to feel really bad. Please continue.
Okay, so for the listeners who don't know, there's a belief in most religions that if someone looks at someone with negative energy, the person who is being looked at can be inflicted with negative physical effects. So whether it be fever, whether it be headaches.
That thing, like, I've seen on TikTok, it's like when your earrings or something like that, like I've heard that's a thing. Like if your left ear rings, then this happens.
As much as I would like to say, like, oh, this is nonsense.
Bro,
like,
I've seen it myself.
I've actually heard of pretty believable. I've seen it myself,
okay? It's fucking weird. My brain literally went to doo-doo mode.
Yeah, like, I don't know if this is placebo or what, but it's something, yeah. So basically, apparently the lady, so like the cooks, I want to say aunt or like sister-in-law, something, like some relative of hers, had gone to a village fest. Mm-hmm. Right, like there was a whole festival and something, and she had some bad encounter with some other woman, and apparently the other woman put a curse or something on this lady.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like it the story is just bizarre, and I'm not sure if I'm recalling this correctly, but apparently first the woman just had like a fever that would not break. Like,
how do you would break, not break curse? For the
okay, life of her. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but no, I just saw an image of like a lady walking by another lady and accidentally
bumped into her. And she's like, I curse you.
And then the lady who the first lady bumped into her is like, I curse you and your 7 future generations. And then this lady is like, oh no. And then she immediately catches
her. Oh, damn. No, so she had like a fever that just won't break. So, you know, when you have like a paracetamol, I can't say anything today. If you have a paracetamol, or like some other sort of, you know, fever breaking drugs, you usually get fine for at least a couple of hours. Her fever would not break. Like, it just would not go away. And then she started saying, like, just really deranged stuff. Which might have been because of the fever. Yeah, but, like, she just started saying stuff.
But even
she
then, it just, like, saying, adds like, to
weird
it.
Things.
Like, if she has a high enough fever that's not breaking at all, I'm sure it leads to some sort of hallucination.
Yeah. And she couldn't, like, step into a temple.
So, oh, interesting.
Some weird stuff, yeah. Like, there was some weird stuff going on. And then they finally got, like, a... Baba, which is like a priest, to come over, and he was like, yeah, she's possessed by a few ghosts, and then there was a whole rite performed and now she's fine.
That's so interesting.
I don't know how much of this is true, but that's what someone who used to cook for us told us.
Like, listen, man, the reason why I used to be an atheist. I genuinely used to be like, fuck religion, I hate all of it. Then I became agnostic, or at least I wasn't against the idea of like there's something being there, purely because of this thing that happened to my brother. Okay, I don't know if my brother remembers. I know my mom and I remember, and we talk about it occasionally. It's fucking weird, messes with my head. But basically, back when I in the previous country that I lived in, I'll say that in the previous country that I lived in, we were walking around like the community area and all that.
Mr. Worldwide.
I'm Mr. Worldwide.
Yeah.
But we're walking around this area, and I guess some lady looked at my brother funny. Like, she just like had a weird glance or whatever. But my mom, I think she noticed it, but she didn't like say anything. She was like, whatever. And that evening, my brother got terribly sick, like horribly sick. We thought it was allergies, because my brother, like at the time, he was very susceptible to like allergies, and especially, and a lot of times his allergies would like cause like nosebleeds, and this is what it was. So we were just like, okay, it's nosebleeding. And also he's just like having this high fever and he's really sick, but like it was so abrupt that and it was like during time where like we weren't expecting his allergies to hit. So we were just confused, and then a day went by or so, and the next day my mom, she just was like, no, like in Hindi you call it like nazar lag gaya isko, right? So then that's basically what my mom was like. And so
Sunidhi trying to talk in Hindi is the funniest.
I will slap you.
I'm just not judging. Her, like I'll sit so in silence.
Yeah, shut no, the I, fuck I, up. Anyway, so
you have a bully, you have a bystander, and you have a bullied.
Anyways, yeah. So we're sitting in the living room, right? I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm just on my phone, minding my business. My mom suddenly makes my brother stand. He's all sick, nose runny, face like puffy, and he's just like, he looks like he wants to cry because of how like frustrated he is. Continuous like body ache and all that. So my mom's like, okay, stand here. And then she goes to the kitchen. She comes out with like a bundle of like newspaper and something's inside it. And I'm like, mom, what's that? And she's like, it's fine, don't worry, I'll explain it to you. And so she lights the newspaper on fire, and then she starts like putting this like circle around my brother, and while she's like saying like some prayer or something, I don't fully remember what she was saying, but like it was some like prayer. And later she told me that like what was in the newspaper was like a bunch of different spices and a bunch of chilies and stuff like that, and it was causing a lot of smoke, and it was like irritating my eyes, and it was affecting my mom a little bit as well. But my brother was, nothing happened to him. Like, his eyes weren't tearing up because of the spices. He wasn't coughing as well. I was violently coughing. He had to open the windows, turn on the exhaust and stuff like that. But then, you know, my brother was calm. An hour or so after that happened, like, he was just laying in bed. He was perfectly fine. His fever was back to normal. Everything was fine. And I was literally losing my...
Maybe the chili smoke is medicine.
I genuinely have no idea.
Don't take my word on it.
I do think there's something to... I don't believe he was possessed by a demon or something. But maybe, like, some home remedies work, you know? Yeah. It makes sense to me from a home remedy.
Also, oh shit, I gotta tell you this again. I don't know what superstitious belief this is, but it's like if you take chilies and you rotate them, revolve them, I don't know, you just like you like hold them in your hand, and you, there's a person sitting down, and you just kind of spin the chilies around the
circle
person.
Okay, circle it around. Oh, I thought you were talking about like tying them to the end of a string and fucking.
No,
Tanvi, this isn't a prank show.
This isn't a prank show. Yeah, so if you do that and you burn them, apparently those who have been inflicted by this is called a nazar, like
evil eye,
like a bad vibe or something by someone, like if they're being negatively influenced by someone else, then the chilies, if you burn them, there's no smoke. But if you burn, you know, like the same thing of a person who's not affected by negative vibes or anything, obviously the chili would smoke if you put it on the gas.
That's she interesting.
Negative vibes so serious.
I've not done this. It's just I'm letting you know beliefs that I've heard like from people.
No, like after seeing that, like it would make sense if it was like a day and my brother was fine after that. That would make sense to me. But literally within an hour,
like every family has at least one person within it that does believe in this.
Yeah. 100%.
There tends to be just one person.
You'll have at least skeptical. One religious fanatic in your family, regardless of where you're from.
It's not a fanatic. People can have beliefs.
Tanvi literally like close to such an extreme.
You're going to get cancelled.
She goes to such extreme.
And Tanvi, just putting it out there, in our podcast Google Doc, yes, we're professional, we have a Google Doc, you've written your name down under religion. You are not doing that episode.
It'll just be me attacking people's beliefs.
No, that's literally what Anika predicted. She's like, this religion is ba-ba-ba-da-da. Fuck you. This religion is ba-ba-da. Fuck you. That's literally what Anika predicted. And here you are.
Literally a day later.
Yes.
She's like, maybe this isn't the best idea. She should not.
Yeah, she immediately like, she's like, well, maybe keep it, but let's remove Tanvi's name from it. Did you actually keep it or did you fully remove it?
I don't remember. I think I just removed her name.
See, here's the thing. Yeah, I'd rather have somebody like circle my face with chilies or whatever than fucking like perform an entire exorcism on me. So it's fine.
Yeah.
This no harm, no foul.
No, but see, exorcisms are if you are possessed. This is for removing negative influences of others. a lot of people, I feel, even if you aren't particularly religious, still believe in vibes, mm-hmm. like bad vibe, good vibe. Just imagine bad vibe, someone else rubbed it off on you. So it's affecting your good vibe. Yeah.
Anika, you know what I'm talking about when I say this, but basically it's like when you're like having like a good like skin day or whatever, like a good hair day, and you start posting about it, and then somebody start having pimples, or your hair gets suddenly greasy. Like that tends to be like somebody like rubbing off their bad juju on you. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, like honestly, if you just think ill of someone, it's don't do it.
Yeah, like don't fucking jinx
basically
anything.
Basically
yeah, yeah, like that's why most people, including myself, like I'm not saying I'm a big believer, but it's just like if I have something good going for me and I don't need to tell anyone, I don't tell them. Yeah, except same. Like my closest friends. Yeah.
So then it's easier to narrow down when things get fucked up. You're like, it's like, yeah, I passed one of these fuckers.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'll tell Leah, I am reducing my sample size day by day.
Eventually it'll just be like just like that one person on the internet.
Just
like,
eventually it'll just like my mother. Yeah, yeah. As I said, eventually it's just gonna be empty. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then something goes wrong, you're just like, mother, here right now, this instant.
No, seriously. Life advice with Anika, if you don't need to tell people about the good things in your life, don't do it, because like chances are they're gonna jinx you. Even if it's not a real thing, why take
it's
the risk?
It's not even you jinx it, like things just fall through sometimes. Like, you want to tell as few people
and
as
then
possible.
You have a thing to
sometimes just jinx others.
No, but it's
of
like
it, you know?
It's like, say you got a really good internship, right? And it's still going on and you're really happy mm-hmm. about it. Now, if you go around and tell everyone and say like a few people jinx you, and now suddenly like the internship that was going great, the boss hates you.
This feels so personal.
Fucking
hell.
This is very specific.
I have only done one internship and it went well, so I'm fine.
Literally every day.
Oh no, now everyone knows. Redacted. Redacted.
I did this. I forgot to send them the email.
Oh no, that was personal stupidity. I forgot to connect the laptop to the internet. Missed two meetings because of this. So,
That's peak.
That was personal stupidity. But yeah, it went well, all in all.
Yeah, also if things are going poorly, tell everybody, because then you're no longer a target.
Oh my god, yeah, that's true. That's so true.
Like, her shit's gone. Her shit is so bad. Let me not interfere. Yeah, I feel bad for this girl.
Like, she's struggling enough as is. Let's
and then, because everyone's kind of giving you like some sympathy, some good vibes, like, you know, I hope it gets better. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you're doing amazing. So definitely talk about your misfortunes. Basically, again, we're just trying to like give you some consolation.
Yes,
please
be
whiny.
A petty bitch.
Just be whiny. We're consoling
you.
I just love her.
Be a pest.
Yeah. Let's ask for pity. Like, I've literally gone against all my morals now.
Same. No, I have a huge ego problem, so I can't ask for pity. But
do
if
it.
You can, I suggest you do it.
If you don't have the same ego issues I do.
And speaking of that, Tanvi, if you ain't a Nikki fan, then the bitch deaf dumb, you ain't my son, you my motherfucking stepson. Shitted on him. That's why I just wanted to say that.
Nice.
At some point.
Why did you single me out? I don't know. Yeah. It's like, why is my Tanvi? That was
so...
Because
I like stood up straight.
Sunidhi is a Nikki fan. You, on the other hand, I'm not so sure.
Like,
so I'm just saying.
Excuse me, Stupid Ho is my favorite song ever it is.
If she ain't a Nikki fan, then the
there's
bitch deaf dumb. You ain't my son. You my
there's
mother
a difference between
stepson.
Liking Nikki and being a fan of Nikki, okay? My shrine is impeccable, all right? Anika's like whole devotion to Nikki is different.
Yeah, like every Instagram story I post, when have I not
but she doesn't
Nikki
follow
song?
Nikki. That's the funny part. She
I like her music. I don't follow any celebrities. If I want to look at them, I go stalk their profile for the last few months and I'm good with that. I don't follow anyone.
Oh, also, speaking of which, dude, I had a question. So, do you guys think, like, speaking of exorcisms and holy water and all, it really makes you think, right? Do you think water is wet?
See, I have noticed that
so I think
demons
that
only possess, like, white people.
Fire,
do you
holy
think
water is probably
racist?
Not-